So this is class one of what is it going to be? Six classes? Eight? How? Oh, I thought I put it in here. I don't know. Somebody who's on who's online can check. Or maybe it's okay. So I'm going to do tonight. I'm going to do meta. Goodwill, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity, self-acceptance, practicing in real relationships, and Sangha. Eight. All right, so it's eight. And then, because that takes us right up to when precept study starts in the beginning of March. So if you want to do some studying for this class, on the website on Tuesday study, and I think there's a nice beautiful graphic for the class as well. Click on that. You can read what I wrote about this. It's on the Zen Studies podcast website. You can listen to it as a podcast. And then I also compiled all the writing into like a Google Doc or a PDF if you want to just have that document. Maybe even print it out. And in the, if you have a live version of either the Google document or the PDF, there's also links to more other things that I did on the podcast about like each of the Brahmaviharas that we will be talking about. But I thought it would be sweet to start our series by chanting the Metta Sutta. So, would somebody pass out chant books? And yeah, I have them here. So, if you have a chant book at home, you could get it. It's on page 59, or Tyler will be putting the link to the chant in the chat. So, you could pull it up.
What page was it again? I'm sorry.
It is 59. And I don't think, yeah, I won't bother with bells because I don't want to turn a musician's sound on. I think it'll sound better if we don't. All right. So I will chant the just the first the title, and then there's descriptions in there, but basically, anytime there's a little upside down triangle, you drop a tone. And if there's a triangle pointing up, you raise it a tone. And if it's underlined, you hold the syllable for a little while. Metta Sutra. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be. Whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, The seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or dying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you. So the idea being that an enlightened heart is an open heart. That if you are awakened, if you have perceived reality with a capital R, if you have, you know, achieved the pinnacle of spiritual practice, you would, this chant would describe you. Cherishing all beings as a mother would cherish her only child. So I find Buddhism very beautiful because, you know, I spent time in the Christian tradition, and similarly, you had a model of a very, you know, sterling character in Jesus, and we wanted to be more Christ-like. But then it remains an ideal that seems very, very, very lovely, very noble, but kind of impossibly far in some ways. And you're not, other than just kind of struggling with yourself, there's not a lot of like, what exactly, what can I do to actually move closer to being like that? So in our practice, kind of everything else we do, you know, our zazen, our dharma study, our precept practice, summoning bodhicitta, all the other things that I include in my 10 fields of Zen, right? Are all about moving us closer to this sense of being awake to reality, where our true self nature is ever changing and cannot be grasped, is boundaryless, is there is no inherent separation between self and other. So there's nothing to be protected, but there's also all things are ourself as well. Leading to this, first of all, kind of a lack of selfishness and self-concern and reactivity, but also to a real warmth and caring. So I thought it would be fun to listen to, I'm gonna have somebody in the cloud read a short article. That's actually an excerpt from Thich Nhat Hanh's book, The Art of Living, where he talks about interbeing. So he kind of created this word, interbeing, to describe this this sense that we get when we awaken to what is true. So, Tyler, would you take it away and read this? And then I can share the link to it if anybody wants to see it later. Go ahead.
The insight of interbeing. Everything relies on everything else in order to manifest, by Thich Nhat Hanh. Emptiness does not mean nothingness. Saying that we are empty does not mean that we do not exist. No matter if something is full or empty, that thing clearly needs to be there in the first place. When we say a cup is empty, the cup must be there in order to be empty. When we say that we are empty, it means we must be there in order to be empty of permanent, separate self. About 30 years ago, I was looking for an English word to describe our deep interconnection with everything else. I liked the word togetherness, but I finally came up with the word interbeing. The verb to be can be misleading because we cannot be by ourselves alone. To be is always interbe, or sorry, is always to interbe. If we combine the prefix inter with the verb to be, we have a new verb, interbe. To interbe and the action of interbeing reflects reality more accurately. We inter are with one another and with all life. There is a biologist named Lewis Thomas, whose work I appreciate very much. He describes how our human bodies are shared, rented, and occupied by countless other tiny organisms without whom we couldn't move a muscle, drum a finger, or think a thought. Our body is a community, and the trillions of non-human cells in our body are even more numerous than the human cells. Without them, we cannot be here in this moment. Without them, we wouldn't be able to think, to feel, or to speak. There are, he says, no solitary beings. The whole planet is one giant, living, breathing cell with all its working parts linked in symbiosis. We can observe emptiness and interbeing everywhere in our daily life. If we look at a child, it's easy to see the child's mother and father, grandmother and grandfather in her. The way she looks, the way she acts, the things she says. Even her skills and talents are the same as her parents. If at times we cannot understand why the child is acting a certain way, it is helpful to remember that she is not a separate self-entity. She is a continuation. Her parents and ancestors are inside her. When she walks and talks, they walk and talk as well. Looking into the child, we can be in touch with her parents and ancestors. But equally, looking at the parent, we can see the child. We do not exist independently. We inter are. Everything relies on everything else in the cosmos in order to manifest, whether a star, a cloud, a flower, a tree, or you and me. I remember one time when I was in London, doing walking meditation along the street, and I saw a book displayed in the bookshop window with my title, with the title, My Mother, Myself. I didn't buy the book because I felt I already knew what was inside. It's true that each one of us is a continuation of our mother. We are our mother. And so, whenever we are hung angry at our mother or father, we are also being angry at ourselves. Whatever we do, our parents are doing it with us. This may be hard to accept, but it's the truth. We can't say we don't want to have anything to do with our parents. They are in us, and we are in them. We are the continuation of all our ancestors. Thanks to impermanence, we have a chance to transform our inheritance in a beautiful direction. Every time I offer incense or prostrate before the altar in my hermitage, I do not do this as an individual self, but as a whole lineage. Whenever I walk, I sit, eat, or practice calligraphy, I do so with the awareness that all my ancestors are within me in that moment. I am their continuation. Whatever I'm doing, the energy of mindfulness enables me to do it as us, through interbeing, not as me. When I hold a calligraphy brush, I know I cannot remove my father from my hand. I know I cannot remove my mother or my ancestors from me. They are present in all my cells, in my gestures, in my capacity to draw a beautiful circle. Nor can I remove my spiritual teachers from my hand. They are there in the peace, concentration, and mindfulness I enjoy as I make the circle. We are all drawing the circle together. There is no separate self doing it. While practicing calligraphy, I touch the profound insight of no self. It becomes a deep practice of meditation. Whether we are at work or at home, we can practice to see all our ancestors and teachers present in our actions. We can see their presence when we express a talent or skill they have transmitted to us. We can see their hands and ours as we prepare a meal or wash the dishes. We can experience profound connection and free ourselves from the idea that we are a separate self through the conscious recognition of interbeing.
You. So, in Buddhism, we avail ourselves of anything that works. Not just one practice, one method, one way of thinking of things. So, I don't know, there's it's not that they're even necessarily different ways, but I mean you could imagine, you know, through zazen and study and working on your own direct realization, you can let go of and start to see through and soften this sense of self, this sense of which really is like a sense of separateness. So you can start to see the illusion of it, you know, that we think it's a very solid thing and we recognize it's not really that solid and we can't really find it and it changes shape and feels different in the morning than it does in the evening and all of that. So we can kind of work at it that way. But then, as he said, there's a way that we can also, and that in a way that is the approach of working on a direct experience of emptiness. Because when we say in Zen, we talk about emptiness, it's emptiness of a particular thing. It's not empty of meaning and empty of reality or whatever. It's empty of an inherent self nature. Like a cup is empty, doesn't have anything in it, but it's something that you might expect to be in it. Right. So, like, we kind of expect we have that self nature. That's why we talk about it being empty of it. It's like it's not an inherently negative thing. It's saying, no, there's something you expect to be there that's not there. So pay attention to that, right? So that's one approach. But kind of a related approach is to think of ourselves as being boundaryless. So I think it is, no, it's not Thich Nhat Hanh, it's Kaz Ta-Nehisi that has a translation of the Heart Sutra, where instead of saying the and talking about emptiness, he talks about boundlessness. But I even like it, even like boundarylessness, because boundless can almost sound like you're really huge. Obviously, it means boundless, but I'm gonna boundaryless, right? Like there's no actual separation. And this is something that we might experience in zazen or mindfulness at a moment where you just, you're not, there's not you over here and the bird singing outside, right? Suddenly it's just kind of like this is life. This is you. You really get that sense, like Thich Nhat Hanh was talking about in here, of like you exist because of all of this, so many things. So exploring that lack of separation is where I feel like, so I have a one of my 10 fields is opening the heart, and there's many ways to do that, but in particular, we are going to begin with the classic practices of the four Brahma Viharas. So the Brahma Viharas is the divine abidings. Vihara is a little hut, like the monks when they go into the forest, have a little hut to meditate in. So the divine abidings are like really safe places to be. Like these are very wholesome, safe experiences, states of mind, if you will, to cultivate. So many of you are probably familiar with them. So there is metta, which can be translated many different ways. Many times it's called loving kindness. It can be friendliness. I particularly like the translation goodwill. I mean, sometimes loving kindness, I don't know, whatever you like in whatever situation, right? But sometimes it's like, as we'll be talking about, summoning a sense of goodwill towards someone is even that can be challenging. Loving kindness can sound like a bit much, right? If there's somebody who's really they've hurt you, or they're continuing to cause harm in the world, or it's difficult. Like just having a sense of goodwill toward them, and not ill will, not anger and hatred is this practice, as opposed to like, oh, loving kindness. But loving kindness is a very common translation of it as well. But I'm actually, unlike the other three Brahma Viharas, I'm just going to use the term metta, because it has become quite common, at least in Buddhist circles, of metta practice. And so, because it can be a term unto itself rather than translating into one of our terms, which is kind of limited. So there's metta, and then compassion, that is mudita, believe, just to keep throwing in the Pali terms. And I love I think it was Edward Kanza's writing that turned me onto this idea that compassion is when you feel goodwill for someone and you see them suffering. And then sympathetic joy. And so we're going to have a class on each one of these. So we're going to have a chance to really go more deeply into exactly what is meant by that, near enemies of it, kind of meditations you might do to explore the Brahma Vihara more. But sympathetic joy It's like you feel goodwill towards someone and you see them like happy, exploring good fortune, right? And you're just happy for them. And then equanimity is a sense of it's, really has a near enemy of indifference, but it's actually a great sense of calm. So if you figure meta is just, it is a lack of ill will, right? There's a being and you just want them to be happy and safe and free from fear and, goodwill. Compassion is pretty straightforward, but it also is, its near enemy, which we'll talk about perhaps, is pity. But if you think of having goodwill towards someone and seeing them suffer, right? So it's just what is first and foremost is just a wish that their suffering would end and they would feel at ease again, as opposed to kind of more of something that might have kind of judgment in it, almost like a lack of goodwill, maybe blaming someone for their situation. This is, the compassion is doesn't involve any of that. Sympathetic joy then is one that actually is a little bit harder for us often, because compassion, when we study the Brahmaviharas, we start with metta, we start with goodwill, but often I think that compassion is often easier for us to feel, even though it implies goodwill, right? But it's almost like they kind of arise together, because when you see someone suffering, when you see someone get hurt or something, it really the empathetic response really arises in us, and we feel like immediate goodwill for that person, like to want them to, as opposed to when somebody's not suffering, like, it seems kind of weird to summon goodwill for them, maybe a little bit extra. And when we start to think about it, it gets a little more complicated in our minds. And then even more so with sympathetic joy, right? Where, like, I don't know, why does anybody need us to like celebrate their, happiness? Sure, we understand compassion, like it's important to be compassionate because then somebody might be hurting and you might help them or whatever. But if they're doing well, what does that have to do with you? Somebody when we were talking about sympathetic joy once said, like, if my neighbor got new countertops, do I have to be happy for them? Like, what's the deal? And then equanimity, the easiest way for me to kind of get my mind around equanimity is, oh no, sorry, let me back up. The easiest way for me to get my mind around sympathetic joy is to imagine the joy you feel for a child when they succeed at doing something, right? It's just you don't think about anything except like, they're like, yay, I went down the slide by myself, and you're like, yay, it just feels very, very simple and natural for us to feel that. So in all of the cases, like the practice of the Brahmaviharas is to somehow find that really simple, pure, easy feeling, and then kind of cultivate it and try to expand it beyond that very simple situation. So I think compassion is we're pretty familiar with sympathetic joy. You can imagine just being, just happy for a little kid who just did something. And then equanimity, I like to think of a little kid who's just like broken their favorite toy, and they're just, oh, they're so miserable. They're so, my God. And you embrace them and you comfort them. And you're not, if you're a nice adult, right? You're not judging them. You're not, shaming them or saying like, ah, it's just a toy. But at the same time, you're not upset. You have a bigger perspective, right? You're like, Oh, that, yeah, I know. But there's lots more toys and I grow out of the toy and so you were, and because you were not upset, you were able to be more present for the child, right? You actually be able to be more beneficial because you were not all overwrought. And I think all of us can appreciate the importance of this when we are either dealing with people in our immediate lives or maybe out in the world who are really struggling and we feel great compassion for them. And it can be very like exhausting or upsetting. And so to have some measure of equanimity, some measure of a larger perspective that can help us remain strong during that is important. So we'll talk about that, all of those more. And all of these, like particularly when you're starting with metta practice, the classic way to begin is with yourself. And beginning with yourself is very important. And if you can just do that and you feel like sincere, just wide open, uncomplicated goodwill toward yourself, that's wonderful. If you can't, then that's something you got to work on, but that's not then where you would begin the practice, right? You would begin the practice. So when we begin metta practice, when we begin the practice of goodwill, we want to call to mind a being for whom we feel just it's just very simple and clear and clean and flows, for a child, for a many of us, it's probably easiest to start with our pets. I mean, somebody pointed out to me once, which I think is so valid. We often, it's often ex said that we have these pets, we have these dogs and cats because they love, they just love us so much. But really, it's, well, not really, but like a huge part of it is that we give them unconditional love. There's something that we can just like, come here, you. I mean, we're just it just unconditioned, and like for us to be able to give unconditional love is huge. Because I mean, it doesn't even matter. Even your kids are gonna grow up or they're gonna misbehave or they're gonna, and then it becomes like that goodwill becomes a little more I probably still with your kids, like you may have things you want them to do, but underneath that goodwill is, wish for goodwill is still purely there. I kind of go beyond that, for parents or friends or spouses or whatever, there ends up being just a little bit of a, I kind of like, I want it to be, I'll send you that goodwill once. Once we've corrected this little issue that I have in my mind. So we take open-heartedness as a sign of progress in our practice, but also then we can take, when we find our closed-heartedness, that can be a nice signal that there are some obstacles in our practice. It is a delusion to think we can sit and study Zazen, or we can sit Zazen and study the Dharma and achieve some, great awakening that will make us a really nice, kindly saint, without paying attention to our closed heart. Right? The closed heart is, that's going to hold you back. So at some point that also has to be dealt with. And this is beautifully reflected in the fact that the Japanese word shin is heart mind. It refers to both your heart and your mind. Like you, I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about it. Like obviously at some point they must have words that differentiate those things, but like shin is it's just that. All right, so extending things universally. So I wanted to begin this evening with a little metta. We're going to do metta next the next class, but kind of in preparation, so you can be thinking about it a little bit over the course of the week. Wanted to begin with metta. With a little exercise, asking you to try to, you know, close your eyes if you need to, and calling to mind a being for whom you feel unconditional goodwill. And then I'll go on from there. So once, you know, I'll talk you through that a little bit. And it, you know, if it's a pet, if it's a child, whatever, like somebody who you just love them, care for them, want the absolute best for them, no matter what. It doesn't have anything to do with you. They don't have to give you anything or change or affirm you. You just want them to be good and well. And then I'm going to mention people, other kinds of people, and ask you to notice the state of your heart. Like, you know, if you did manage to kind of feel an open heart, and then can, you know, mentioning this other person, and like, how does that change? You feel any kind of, you know, any kind of closure, any kind of tightness, or I don't know, conditionality, resistance. And you may notice as we go through, you may feel some sadness or compassion for someone, or some joy or sympathetic joy, because if you're feeling goodwill, it depends on the situation the person or the being is in, right? As you think of my dog, I think of him like, you know, squeaking his squeak toy, and I feel a little sympathetic joy, right? So, but focus really on that goodwill, on that aspect of it. And then afterwards, I would love if we should have some time to reflect a little bit, and love to hear people's experiences, positive or negative. If you notice any particularly like physical sensations, maybe emotions or thoughts along with the easily flowing metta compared to when there's a little ambiguity. All right, so let us begin with calling to mind a being, trying to picture them in front of you, for whom you just, the words for metta are, may you be free from fear and anxiety. May you be at ease. May you be happy. Just want them to be happy. May you be free from fear and anxiety. May you be at ease. May you be truly happy. That being in front of you, imagine them happy. Trying to maintain that warmth and that openness, that sincerity, that sense of generosity. Call to mind your mother, whether your mother is still with you or not. Maybe return for a moment to your grounding, recipient of metta. With simplicity and openness. Now think of your spouse, or if you don't have a partner, think of maybe your closest friend. May you be free from fear and anxiety. May you be at ease. May you be happy, truly happy, however happiness looks for you. Now call to mind a sibling. You don't have a sibling, maybe you have a cousin or an aunt or an uncle. May you be free from fear and anxiety. May you be at ease. May you be happy. Call to mind someone who has hurt or disappointed you in the past. They may have already come up, but may you be free from fear and anxiety. May you be at ease. May you be happy. And if necessary, maybe return to your grounding, simple subject. And then think of yourself. May I be free from fear and anxiety. May I be at ease. May I be happy. Despite all of my shortcomings, may I be truly happy. So, any observations of what it feels like if you managed to have a subject that it flowed very easily? How did that feel in your heart and your chest and your mind? How did it feel if you encountered at some point a little obstruction to that metta? Myself, I noticed when I asked that call to mind somebody who's hurt or disappointed you in this. Called to mind this friend and I heard my voice changed. May you be free from fear and anxiety. It was like kind of mechanical. Yeah, may you be at ease. May you be at ease. Rachel.
I know that for my grounding person, it was really easy. It was the first thing that came to mind, and I did want to wish her well because she's going through such a hard time right now, and I really would feel compassion. But when it came to that person that disappointed me, I was like, do I have to? How am I supposed to feel this? It feels weird. It feels un insincere. I wanna find someone else. I just kept thinking to myself. My brain kept going, you don't have to think about this. And I was like, no, I have to do this meta. I have to send this goodwill somehow. But it felt very, very much like a tug, or more like I'm being dragged across the ground and kicking and screaming. It just felt so bad. So I was kind of happy to go back to the grounded person and not do it.
Leah.
When I did this practice, my grounding person is my dog, Chester. And it's so easy to just, like you were saying, like he's squeaking his toy. Or I was thinking of when I come home and I've been gone, and he's just like, you're home. He's wagging his whole body, you know, his tail and everything else, because it's just like, it's the best thing ever. You're home. And that's just so great. So I was thinking of that, like, oh, yay, you're home. And then as I was going through the people, it's like they had positions and space. There was my mom and my dad are sort of right here. And then my spouse is right here. And then as you know, we're moving out. Then it's like friends and relatives are sort of moving out away from this, which is meta, the center. And then I kept having to sort of reach further and further. And then when I got to the person who disappointed me, I feel like they're hard to reach in front of me. That's how I felt. I wasn't disturbed by it, but it was very odd how this, like, it was spatial for me.
Interesting. Alice.
It's funny that we're talking about this because something happened today. I have a teammate. She's not watching this. I have a teammate who actually caused me quite a bit of she betrayed me. And it was a harsh betrayal. And it caused me to have scar tissue for a whole year trying to deal with her. Well, I bumped into her again today. We were on the same team after all, and she's playing. And for the first time, I saw her get very, 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 very anxious and very, very, very nervous for her match. And instead of feeling Schadenfreude, I actually felt like extreme sympathy and compassion for her. And when you made us do meta just now, and there were some people who I had trouble with, you know, wishing them less anxiety and less fear. But then I also realized that the reason why they hurt me and other people in the first place was because of that fear and anxiety. So in essence, I do wish that they are absolved of their fear and anxiety, because then they could unchain me and the rest of the people that they cause pain towards.
That's where I noticed, because Chosen Bay's, you know, is big into meta practice, and she changed, so that phrase is that I was using, but I noticed that she's really gotten into the habit. She says, "May you be truly happy." And I kind of like that. I mean, because there's a little invitation to judgment in there, right? Of like, maybe truly happy, not like shallowly happy, like, you know. But it's kind of it. I think I find it helpful, particularly if there is someone who is it was difficult. And in a way, you don't, you kind of don't want them to just like have kind of shallow happiness that makes them forget or not realize like the harm that they're doing or whatever. But if you think of that truly happy, like if they were truly happy, they wouldn't be hurting other people, right? They wouldn't be doing that damage. Yes, Thomas. Yes, our questioner chair, where you can be seen.
Oh my goodness, being seen was a terrifying thing. One of the things that I found interesting as we're going through meta was that when it came to people who I have a lot of, you know, goodwill towards already, it was the thing that came to mind most immediately was like seeing them in their moments of anxiety or suffering and just feeling, you know, it was the meta and it was the compassion coming up at once for me. Like I want them to feel like safe and well and to not be afraid. And noticing that for people who had more difficulty extending goodwill, I felt like I was able to extend the goodwill, but I wasn't able to readily see or know their anxieties and fears the way that I know them more of the people I care about. You know, when it came especially to the person who I felt like has hurt me, like even now I can't like readily think of what are things that I know like caused that person anxiety in the past. So even though I was able to extend meta, I wasn't able to extend compassion. Like that was part of the exercise, but like I was noticing that that didn't flow as readily from for other circumstances.
Yeah, it occurs to me that for the people we have the more complicated relationships with, right? Because they hurt us, or like I noticed with my, you know, with my sibling, you know, there's a lot of stuff there. And so like in order to really, you know, feel the meta, I was kind of like, okay, I guess I'll put this shit aside, right? You know, and I really noticed kind of that had to be like a real kind of giving up and compromise in order to extend that. And it occurs to me that, you know, not always, but sometimes we might even just be less perceptive, right? When we have kind of a closed heart towards someone, we don't want to see their suffering or weaknesses or anxiety or whatever, right? Yeah. We just like only see kind of what we don't like. Which is, I always feel a little ashamed in a way when I'm essentially, I've had a closed heart to someone and then I see them suffering and then I'm like, oh, you know, I'm like, suddenly I see they're a human being and I, you know, I feel like I can recognize that. And I'm kind of like, I had to wait until I saw them. But I think it's pretty natural in a way, right? We end up feeling quite guarded with people sometimes. And it's when we see their weakness that, which is what makes it really difficult for, I mean, at least for me anyway, the most kind of most difficult person is somebody who I suspect is really struggling in some ways and that causes a lot of harm to people, is really obnoxious, but also seems like impervious, right? Strong and impervious and completely confident. And it's just, you can't see any chinks, right? You can't see the suffering because they're hiding it so much. So it's like, oh. Betty.
I'll just make this quick. Just the last points that you guys have brought up about not being able to see the suffering or not being willing to see the other person's anxiety, fear, stresses. And it dawned on me that if I do that, I have to let go of my clinging to the anger that I feel toward that person. So, like, duh, right? Anyway, had some work to do on that, apparently.
Exactly. Like, I mean, so it's the ill will. Like, metta is the antidote to ill will. And I think that's so it's an interesting, we can work on our ill will, right? We can work on our stuff, on our karma, on our reactivity. So in a sense, we can kind of what's that caused by and whatever. But it's interesting that they have this other method, which is almost like, let's just try the antidote. Let's just go kind of try to force yourself to feel some goodwill instead of ill will and just see what that does. Alice.
What is the antidote to envy?
Sympathetic joy. All right. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all.
Thank you, Tomio,
Thanks,
and
everybody.
everyone.
Have a good
And
night, guys. Take care.
And then in lo in